This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
This is The Deep Dive, as you know. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and today we're delighted to have someone whose range of skills, talents, interests, and enthusiasms is one of the widest of anybody I know, Dion Chang. Dion, he's established a company that does futurology in South Africa, spotting the trends that businesses and others need to understand, know, and take advantage of, Flux Trends. And I always have to restrain myself from saying flux capacitor because the film Back to the Future sort of lingers in my head somewhere. But no, it's Flux Trends. But he came to that as a background as a fashion editor in magazines, and he is a noted allurophile, I think is the right word for this. Yes. For those of you whose Latin is a little bit limited, he's a cat fan. He likes cats. He has a cat. He's had many cats. And he's just written a book, Perfect Life, A Perfect Life, which is, I guess, New Yorkese for a perfect life. And it's got this picture of a very happy looking, what is that, a basset hound or a beagle?
A dachshund.
A dachshund on the front wearing a pair of studious looking glasses. And it's one of the most amazingly interesting books I've read in quite a while. And my diet for reading is often a little too heavy toward social anthropology or political studies or international relations. But this is a book which describes the way in which people who have pets, dogs and cats, although there's no mention in there of fringed lizards or turtles, as far as I could remember, but maybe there should be. I had a turtle once for years as a pet. But it's the way in which humans have increasingly embraced the idea, if I could synthesize it down to a sentence or two, the way in which humans have increasingly decided that their pet is not simply a pet, it's a family member, and as such deserves much of the same kind of treatment that any other valued family member would be. And there are many descriptions of which hotel you should go to overseas that gives designer food for your pet or a special bed or all manner of other wonderful things. And the other thing about Dion, I guess we should also mention, he's become a pet doula. Am I pronouncing that properly?
Yes, you are.
Which helps people in their moments of distress as their pet dog or cat passes from this realm on to the next. Not so much for the benefit of the pet as much as the people that the pet's leaving behind, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
How you resolve the grief and the emotions that go with that. And by way of explanation, we have three pets buried in our garden. Each of them was appreciated, loved, and we did little ceremonies over this, and we know exactly where they are. They're with us always. Anyway, Dion, thank you for joining us with all that introduction.
Thank you, Brooks. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very honored to be on The Deep Dive, and especially to talk and spread the word about the pet economy, as well as you say, you know, it's a very niche and little known area of service, the pet doula. But I can explain that, you know, it's a follow-on from an interest or a calling, should I say, that I received about 3 years ago to become an end-of-life companion doula, and then I went into an area of specialization. But, you know, to start from the beginning, the book really straddles my trend-spotting world with my other cat butler role in life, and combines the two. And I was just, you know, fascinated that. So I think for the listeners, let me just go back. I think that, you know, the genesis of the book was really tracking the trends that we do at Flux Trends. So I've been for almost 2 years been really watching shifting demographics and family dynamics, the sort of the shift of the nuclear family, where that's going. And specifically in Asia, you find sort of vast swathes of countries that are going through aging populations and declining birth rates. So specifically in South Korea, but China and Japan as well. And one little stat really caught my attention, and that was back in 2023. So the largest e-commerce retailer in South Korea released their figures at the end of 2023, and they discovered they had sold more pet strollers, so pet prams, than human baby prams, which for me was just a mind-blowing stat that something really significant has shifted. And when I sort of dug a little bit deeper, I discovered that on opposite ends of the planet, in completely different cultures, so in America, Japan, and China, there are now more households that have pets than households that have children under the age of 15. And that was also another remarkable stat. And what I've been also tracking for a long time, which is a big overlay and a factor of this fur baby phenomenon, let's call it that. You said, looking at pets as family, is that a younger generation increasingly are pursuing a child-free lifestyle. So not a childless, so they are able to procreate and have babies, but they are just choosing not to, and that's for many reasons. So economies can't afford children, concern about the future of the world, and as we've seen in 2025 and coming into 2026, it's a bit of a crazy place. So people are saying, the environment is shredded, politics is in tatters, economies are also in tatters. I don't know if I want to bring children into this. So all that love, attention, and disposable income has been put into this growing pet economy. So that's
Can I
so I've been tracking that as a starting point.
just interrupt and say that you mentioned South Korea, and it is intriguing that for generations, dog meat was a thing. People consumed it, and it was, but you basically could buy it fairly easily.
Yes.
During COVID, there was this change, this amazing change. The law was changed. It was illegal to sell dog meat in South
Yes.
Korea, and people started adopting dogs as pets. Whereas 10 years before that, virtually nobody would have thought of a dog as a quasi family member. Now they were, just as you've noted, pretty much ubiquitous. In Japan, I have a friend. He's French, but he's a political scientist teaching at an extension of an American university, and his hobby is wandering the streets of Tokyo, documenting dogs dressed in designer clothing and in dog prams. I mean, I keep asking him if he's ever going to publish a book on this stuff. And he says, no, I just take the pictures. I just love them. So there are dogs that have, I mean, and obviously now there must be a sub-industry in the fashion world making clothing that's expressly designed for dogs in the couture world. I mean, I find this a little mind-boggling, but my dog that I had for years wouldn't have tolerated anything more than a collar.
Well, there's an entire chapter dedicated to it, and with my tongue firmly in my cheek, the chapter's called "The Dachshund Wears Prada," and I went down so many rabbit holes with this book, and one of them was to look at obviously the top end, the really high end and affluent customer, the pet parent who is spending, some would say, obscene amounts of money on pampering their pets for private jets, these five-star hotels which you mentioned, but also the luxury brands have all risen up to meet this demand. So I looked at almost every single luxury brand you can mention, names, darling, names. Every big name has a pet category in it, and the one that I highlighted there, which was to date the most expensive pet accessory that I've been able to stumble upon is a Louis Vuitton bone trunk. So it's shaped in the it's built in the shape of a dog biscuit, a bone. But what it carries, and this also kind of just signifies where we are with this pet economy, and especially in terms of luxury brands, is it houses a tray which you can just lift out of the bone trunk, and all it carries are two feeding bowls, so one for water and one for food, and this is if your pet does not want to be eating out of any strange crockery while you are traveling, so you can travel with that, and it really is an obscene amount of money, but it exists, and that's my point about the book, is that there are services that are just building and building and building, it's a very there's a need out there, and it's just a growing phenomenon that we're coming across.
We're going to continue this conversation with Dion Chang, who has been tracking the trend lines on dealing with high-end pet needs or desires. I guess we would call that in a minute, but first, this station break.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
And we're back. This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual. And my guest today is the astonishingly wide-ranging enthusiast of all manner of things, Dion Chang. I think the last time Dion and I talked for radio, we were talking about trends in human circumstances, the way in which life is becoming different for us. Today, we're talking about how the trends for dogs and cats and the owners or the household managers of dogs and cats are changing circumstances. I mean, there's the old joke, of course, you know, get a dog, get a friend, get a cat, become a butler. But it's
Exactly.
true. I mean, if
and
you ever
serve we do.
You put your cat's food bowl in the wrong place, too much sun, not next to the right chair, or too far from the right chair, face the wrong direction. The food isn't arranged artfully. I mean, it goes on forever, and the cat just walks away as if you've just committed a mortal sin and will starve to death rather than consume the food. Never mind the food is designer cat food now, prescribed by veterinarians. We still have to get some of these other things right. You're talking about these things. We're joking a little bit about this industry, not industry, this the economic sector, I think, is probably a better
Yes,
way to
yes.
describe it. Can you put some numbers to it in terms of percentages or amounts of money, whether it's globally or America or South Africa, perhaps?
There are. I don't have the exact figures at my fingertips, but the global pet economy is set to grow to something like 30 billion. In the next couple of years to 2030, and
That's generation.
there are also stats within the book about the South African pet economy, and what is interesting is that you're starting to see, because people would say to me, well, you're tracking a global trend, and there this is what's happening around the world. But South Africa, everyone always assumes that South Africa lags behind in things. What is interesting is just in terms of economics of a pet economy, if you look at a huge country and population like China, so they estimate that the current pet population in China is about 120 million. That the pets are around there, which is a phenomenal amount. But I think what's more interesting for me is that you're starting to see that South Africa is following the same trajectory. So I think the switch from service animal, and I think this is an important point, is that our pets were originally service animals. So you had a guard dog, you had a cat to chase and keep vermin away from your home, from your businesses, and that started to change. And you started inviting them onto your porch or your stoop, then into your kitchen, then into your living room, and now they're on your bed and they've taken over completely. That happened in China about 20 years ago. And in South Africa, we're starting to see the same signals as what I've referred to in terms of the trend wheel that are starting to happen. So pet funerals, elaborate pet funerals are being ha are happening in South Africa with an emerging middle class who are first-time pet owners, who are also buying cemetery plots for their pets. The if you look at the trajectory of where this is going, it's we need to look at what's happening in China. So if you think of a lifespan of a dog is between 10, 15 years old, so those first adopters, quite literally, of pets as of animals as your pet or members of the family, in China are now all senior dogs, and that has had a knock-on effect and has spawned another subsection of this pet economy of senior pet healthcare and then of pet funerals as well. So we're starting to see around the world the very, very same trajectories that are happening. And again, if the listeners just missed that at the introduction, is this really, really big child-free movement around the world, which is kind of fueling this. So you see a lot of millennials and specifically Gen Zs who are saying, I'm not going to have I'm not going to have kids. And on social media, you find huge numbers of reels where it's this is how my generation drops the grandkids off on the weekend when they go away. And there's a knock at the door, and the grandparents open the door, and there's a pram or a stroller with a cat or a dog in there. And I mean, it's kind of it's always a funny reel to watch, but it's a good social commentary of what that generation is starting to see as well. Here we're dropping off the grandkids with the grandparents, and it's a cat or a dog, and it's a pet as well. But Brooks, just to can I clarify something as well?
Please.
Because I think what people might not get with just like, oh, well, you've got, people that are obsessed with pets. There is, in the book, I delve into the science of the fur baby phenomenon. So there is an actual science of why we regard and why we can substitute quite easily and quite naturally our pets for having little kids. So the one big indicator is oxytocin. So you get a hit of oxytocin, a chemical reaction in your brain, when you look into the eyes of your spouse, your children, your loved ones, a really, really good friend. That will give you feelings, sort of, it'll just release a whole lot of feel-good feelings with chemicals inside your system. Scientists have found that if you stare into the eyes of your pet, you get the very same hit of oxytocin in your brain. So there's a chemical reaction that is very, very similar, if not exactly the same, as looking into a loved one or a spouse or your kids. And then the fascinating thing that I found out was that your pets actually have the same cognitive abilities as a 2 or 3 year old toddler. So what that does on top of the oxytocin is when you see a little puppy or a dog taking their toy in their mouths and running around the house mad and just sort of being all excitable and everything like that, you get this nurturing feeling that this is like a little toddler and you need to protect and nurture this little being as well. So the parallels between little kids or toddlers and your pets is there, and there's scientific proof to back that up, which is why people fall deeply, deeply, deeply in love with their pets.
There is, I'm going to build on that because I read an article a few years ago in a reputable journal, as opposed to like New York Post, which talked about the way in which dogs have been selectively bred so that their eyes and their facial physiognomy has been increasingly infantilized, so that we have the phenomena of puppy dog eyes
Yes.
in adult dogs. So that we build that chemical psychological bond. And surprisingly, Walt Disney, when they designed Mickey Mouse back in the 20s, understood that intuitively and drew Mickey Mouse's head with the same idea that the big eyes are what will catch your attention and your appreciation and ultimately your embrace of the character. And I can tell you from personal experience that when I've been ill, one of my cat, the other one is a little bit psychotic, but one of them will come over and be reassuring, shall we say. Here, you can
yes.
pet me now. It's okay.
And of course, you take the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. No question about it. You know, hold still. Let me pet you the rest of the afternoon. The book, A Perfect Life, it's a shame listeners can't see it because I'm holding a copy of it. I have finished reading it. The book was recommended to me, almost forced upon me, by the person who manages the store where I buy my cat food. He said, you have to read this book. And so I got a hold of your publisher and they, or through you to the publisher, and they sent me two copies. I read one. My daughter got another copy. She's reading it. We are your press agents.
Thank you very much. I much appreciate it.
Tell me a little bit about how you did the research for high-end hotels and resorts that offer specialized dietary consulting for pets or all natural fiber, personalized bedding, or the list of spa baths, I guess, as well, on and on. Did you personally go to all these places and check them out, or are you relying on third-party information?
No, I had to rely on third-party information because, like I said, the multiple rabbit holes that I went down were both fascinating and very, very time-consuming as well.
Mm.
But I also wrote this book from a global perspective. So my hope is that because I the research about the global pet economy is so large, I hope that it will sell internationally, and I think it'll resonate as well. A South Korean friend of mine just said, as soon as it's published, just please translate it into South Korea, because they are so pet obsessed in South Korea that you'll have a bestseller in Asia. But that said, so just for the listeners, the book is kind of in three parts. So one is really all of the trend background of why we've got this pet economy. And how it came about. The middle section is about the services that are available right now, and I'll explain some of them. And then the last bit is about, well, if you've had this perfect life and you really, really consider this as part of your family, then how do we say goodbye to a pet in a much better way?
Dion, just for a sec,
yes.
We're going to have to take another station break, but we'll be right back after these messages. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we're speaking to the irrepressible Dion Chang, whose new book, A Perfect Life, tells you more than you ever will need to know about how to make your cat or dog perfectly happy.
Stay tuned for the Chief Rabbi of the Union of Orthodox Synagogues, Chief Rabbi Dr. Warren Goldstein, at 2 p.m., where he gives his insights on the weekly Parsha. This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as usual, and my guest today, Dion Chang, and his newest book, A Perfect Life, which tells you, gives you lots of ideas about how to deal with the way in which your dog, your cat, your dogs, your cats have become more than just the family pet. They're no longer just Fido anymore. They're more than a child. They're some sort of integrated part of the whole. And just before I interrupted you, you were going into the third section, the final journey part for the pet, which ties back into life counseling and end of life counseling, I guess, for humans.
Yeah. So as I was saying before the break, the three parts of it is the sort of technical background, the facts and figures of an emerging pet economy. The middle section, which we can discuss now, is the services, and I'll say this quite confidently, the insane services that you are now able to get for your pets and the
Absolutely.
insane amounts of money that pet parents are willing to pay for these services. And that made me really think that, well, you know, if you are so obsessed and so besotted with your pet, and I've had to say goodbye to many pets, and I know how traumatic that is. And in training as a end-of-life doula, my trainer actually said, you can also pick a speciality. I didn't know that doulas could have a speciality, but she said, you'll realize that you've done this a lot within your life, but you haven't really thought about it. And what really struck me was the fact that I had been helping friends. I know we have a mutual friend, or had a mutual friend, Barbara. I helped her with three, saying goodbye to three of her cats. And even as a child, I don't know what my parents thought. I used to have elaborate funerals for lizards and budgies and goldfish, and all of that, in the garden.
I'm with you
So
on
it
that.
was.
I understand.
So it was it was within the DNA, but that's really the structure of the book. But going back to the services, you know, you asked, had I seen, all of these things? No, because I really wanted to get the best of the best, but I also wanted to overlay it with a lot of practical tips for pet owners. So, for example, the travel. On the extreme, I tracked about six different jet airlines. So these are G4, G5 private jets that only service, and I love the way they switch it. They said, for the animal and one human companion. So they're not saying, you and your pet, but it's for the animal and then for the human companion. And these are for the pets that won't even turn left on a commercial airline. But to dovetail that, I also see a lot more airlines allowing pets into the cabin. So there is a very, very detailed chapter on how to travel with a pet, how to go through customs, security, where to look for dog relief zones and airport if you're flying long distance and you need to do all of those. There were just I found it just fascinating, even as a cat person, just the intricacies of really how to manage traveling with your pet because they are now this companion. And that led me to hotels. And Brooks, I think the one that I highlighted, because it was really difficult to do that. So no, I haven't visited them, but I had to try and pick from reviews, from all of those things, the kind of the best, the gold standard. And the gold standard for a cattery, I think it would be an insult to call it a cattery, the Cat Hotel is in England, and there are different suites. And what I loved about it was that I think a webcam is just a basic service that any hotel pet hotel should have, but this cat hotel has an a la carte menu, but also I love this a TV in their rooms, which you can decide what to play, or the hosts will either play a National Geographic bird video, undersea fishes, or just kind of graphics of the wild, so that keeps your cat entertained in their room. So
Yeah.
these are the kind of services you get.
I have to tell you that one of them that doesn't like television, although she likes chasing the birds in the garden, the real thing. The other
Yes.
one will sit transfixed on a National Geographic wildlife thing as long as the cats are busy this being the stars. Not
Yes.
interested when wildebeest run around, but if the lion or cheetah or leopard or whatever it might be, is busy doing what cats are supposed to do. Our cat sits there, and you can almost see him say, "I wish I could do that too." I mean, all right, I'm anthropomorphizing beyond all description, but he'll sit there for an hour and watch, leopards attacking other creatures, climbing trees. And I don't know whether it's the motion or the some sort of species compatibility, or maybe they're just tired, but they will watch and they will stay with it. Puts a lie to the idea that cats can't see the two-dimensional process of a television and make sense of it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the Michelin star chef designed room service menu for dogs blew my mind. Linked to that, so it's not just a pet friendly hotel, it's pet obsessed. And these are really, really 5-star hotels around the world that now cater for animals. They even have one hotel offers jet lag therapy for puppies because, well, puppies and dogs get jet lag if you travel through different time zones, and you kind of need to, to do that. And one hotel in New York is very sweet. They said, well, if you don't have a pet and you're feeling a bit lonely, they will loan a goldfish to you for your stay, so you've got some company in your room.
That's cruel. You can go to Tokyo now, and you can go into cafes, coffee shops and bars, and you can rent a cat for an hour
Yes.
or two. The place will have like 20 cats, and you get your pick. Do you want a Siamese, or would you like a ginger cat, or how about a Maine Coon? And you can sit there, and you can commune with the creature, and you and they. Of course, then you have to pay for it, but okay, there it is.
And I think, Brooks, I think that's the point, and that's really the, the third section of it that I really, really wanted to get across to pet parents, is that, having accompanied people and seeing, when I started writing the book and I started speaking about that, and also to speaking to people about being a pet doula, which is sort of such a weird niche thing, people immediately have stories. And what I picked up was firstly, the disenfranchised grief. So when you are not in a circle of friends or family that have the same feeling or bond with a pet, and when you lose a pet, that grief is kind of pushed aside, and they tell you, well, just get over it, or get another one. So before I started writing this book, I had to say goodbye to, and the book is dedicated to my cat Billy Bob, who I've never had a cat that reached the age of 20. And you can't tell me that a 20-year chunk of your life, of having this little sentient being on your lap, next to your desk, all of those kind of things, will not have a significant pull on, and be heartbreaking when you do that loss. And when I spoke to a lot of pet parents, is I was mortified. Some people love their pets so much, but they didn't want to be in the room when they were euthanized, which I thought was just really, really tragic. And I said, no, there's got to be a better way of doing things, of putting rituals in place, of saying goodbye. If we value the friendship and companionship of our pets so much, we need to do it a lot better. So the last part of the book is really dedicating into putting structures into place and giving a more dignified goodbye to your companion.
The more garish version of that is a neighbor I had when I was a child who had a beloved dog. And when the dog passed away, she had the dog. She hired the services of, I swear this is true, a
A
taxidermist,
taxidermist, yes.
and kept the dog as an eternal presence in her living in her front room of her house forever. Dion, we have to take another break.
Sure.
And we'll be back. This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest today, Dion Chang, and we're learning more than we may need to ever know about how to deal with the services that your dog, your cat, must indeed endure, demand, and accept. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we're speaking to Dion Chang. Dion, Flux Trends, cat butler, formerly fashion editor, analyst of the zeitgeist of modern society and where it's going. There's a little bit in here I'm going to read, just a couple of sentences, which is something that I had never thought of before. For cats, it is recommended that they are given wider and shallower bowls to prevent whisker fatigue. There is
Yes.
something I had never heard of before, whisker fatigue. Cats' whiskers are ultra sensitive and allow cats to detect subtle movements, vibrations, and air currents. which helps them understand the size, shape, and speed of objects. So if the cat, I assume that means if the cat bowl is too narrow, too shallow, or too oddly shaped, the cat can't understand its environment.
Yeah, and might just not be enjoying the eating process as much because they get the constant stimulation they get from their whiskers on a bowl that's too narrow would be distracting It also goes into possibly elevating bowls as well as a different way of giving of feeding your pet.
I have a question. It's not in your book. It's not covered. I've never actually asked a veterinarian this question before, and I think I figured it out. I understand that cats prefer water that has movement to it, so that, for example, a bowl that just sits there all day long, collecting dust and miscellaneous ephemera that floats on it, is not the cat's favorite way of drinking. Both of our cats love drinking from our swimming pool, which is a salt chlorinated pool. And I'm making the inference that it somehow mimics their need to have the taste of salt that would be contained in the blood of a freshly killed rat or mouse or vole or sparrow or something. And some deep psychological need to taste something that somehow echoes blood is buried in the psyche of my two cats. Does that sound reasonable, or am I as crazy as I sound?
I think you might be pushing the pushing the vampire envelope a little bit there,
okay.
but obviously the salt is attractive to them because that salt content and salt licks, I think for quite a few animals would be very, very attractive as well. But yes, but I think the moving water part is that, I mean, some pet parents, and specifically cat butlers, very dedicated ones, will switch on a tap and let it drip just so that their beloved feline can lick from running water rather than just the static bowl, as you say.
Well, I mean, I've noticed that over the years that if you have a tap that you turn on, so it's just a cat will sit there fascinated for as long as the drips are periodic and not a straightforward flowing water. They can't get away from the fascination of where are these things coming from.
Yeah, and I think the movement as well. So yes.
When I read the book, I thought for a while that because you and I used to, and many of our listeners probably still do, lots of travel. And often some of us have traveled with pets, either because we're being relocated to someplace or because we just take our pet with, that there's a section in the book which you could make a standalone thing for airlines, that they would just be interested in all of this and passengers would read it enthusiastically and say, that's information I need to know, rather than the entire book, How to Deal with a Dying Pet, probably a little gruesome for some people, but how to deal with a peripatetic cat might be really fascinating for them while they're in flight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be a little extract and a little brochure as well. But you know, as I said, I really wanted the book to be I wanted the reader to be part incredulous about what is actually going on and the numbers and the figures and the services, but also to have that very, very practical advice, which does extend to saying goodbye as well to a pet. But I believe that there's an equal balance of very, very practical tips that you can do. You know, even there's a whole chapter on pet allergies of how to do that. And I think for the dog owners listening in, is a big one is the separation distress that people go through, but I see that as a growing problem that people are worried about it, and it's a COVID hangover that everybody got pets or a lot of people got pets during lockdown, and then the pet got very used to them being in the home. And then what do you do now that you maybe have to go back to work full time or not? And I've picked up a lot of pet distress or separation distress in that. And in the book, I give step-by-step lessons of how to kind of minimize that distress. I think with cat butlers, we're a bit lucky because your cat will like, oh, you've been away for 4 hours. I didn't realize that you'd gone. Whereas the dog
That's a
owners,
cat.
the dog owners will have a more immediate reaction for you.
Now, we've been making light of some of these issues, but I don't mean to minimize the contents that you've put together either, although we've been joking about it. There really are lots of very practical ideas and thoughts, and a lot of it seems to me to be sort of marinated in real psychology, sociology, and behavioral science, although it's phrased with this particular slant about the excesses that people may go through. But it seemed to me that the behavioral science was real, and if you just had to hear that part of it too, even though you read it and you go, "Oh my goodness, that's bizarre," except that underneath it, there's real science.
Yeah, I had a very long and very insightful interview with Lee Schenker, who's a animal behavioralist, and it's actually I've called on her a few times to sort of sort out some feline family dynamics when I had more than one cat. And what I wanted to do really with that chapter was to have all of the really fabulous and insane and absurd trends to do that. And then, right at the end, sort of sit down with her and say, all right, from a behaviorist point of view, what are we doing right and wrong within this pet economy with kind of giving all of these treats, with all of those things? And she brings the whole picture back into kind of, brings back to the ground. It's very, very grounded, her advice. And she's got some very, very strong feelings about, how to handle your pet, specifically dogs, which I think a lot of dog owners will be quite surprised at, that they're probably not doing the right thing in kind of spoiling their pets or dressing them up, which is completely against. But yeah, that's a very interesting way to kind of look at this pet economy through a behavioralist's eyes, and that I found quite riveting and also very sobering as well.
That interview is repeated, I presume, in almost its entirety at the end of the book. So some people might actually want to read that first and then go to the book itself so that you have the grounding. We're going to take another quick break and then we'll be right back and we'll wrap up. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we're speaking to the unique Dion Chang, who tells you more about how to dress your dog than anybody ever will.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is, in fact, The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. My guest, Dion Chang, author of his new book, newest book, A Perfect Life, which is a look into the world of how we must now begin to understand our human relationship and interactions with our cat, with our dog. They're no longer just pets. Fido is no longer just guarding the gate or herding the sheep. Fido is now a sort of a pseudo child joined in a family existence, and the dynamics of it are different than it would have been 10,000 years ago, with the dog sort of waiting for the scraps around the campfire, I guess. Now it's a whole different relationship. Dion, it's been a delight. I hope people listening will go out and buy the book. It's one of those books that you can read a chapter, go, let me think about that. Put it down, come back, read another chapter, think about some more, go back and reread the first one just to make sure they got the whole picture of it, and then keep on going right through to the end. And I hope that you do well. How would you sum up your put it this way, the last section, which talks to dealing with the end of a relationship because the pet has passed away. This is now an industry all on its own, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and as I said previously, I think the reason why I really wanted to end the book with that and the concept of a pet doula is that I think we can really do better in saying goodbye to a very valued family member, companion that's really seen you through thick and thin. And so I framed that last section really about why pet loss hits so deeply. And I think anybody listening with a pet will resonate that with that. You know, your pet doesn't see your status. They don't care if you're rich or poor. If you're sad, as you said, they'll come and comfort you. They're happy to see you. Any dog owner knows, you know, any excuse to be happy, a walk, coming home, food, all of those kind of things. And I think the relationship that we have with our pets is this unconditional love. It's a very, very deep bond. And when we have to say goodbye, it really, really hits hard. And I don't think that has been acknowledged in wider society. But with the growth of the pet economy, I think we're going to have to acknowledge this and kind of consider the role of a pet doula. And I firmly believe that's a service that is increasingly going to be needed as the pet economy grows.
We've been speaking with Dion Chang, proprietor, the manager, the head of Flux Trends, but his side gig, is helping us understand the life of our dog, our cat, and the way in which humans must interact with them now and into the future. It's a lovely book, A Perfect Life. Okay, I pronounced it properly, by the way. Perfect. That's how it's
Yes,
spelled.
yes.
It's available in bookstores. Do go get. It's got this distinctive orange color cover, which means it stands out on a bookshelf in a bookstore. And I think readers, listeners will find it an interesting and attractive read, and it will help you understand a little bit more about the way in which your pet sees you as your pet, either your dog manager or your cat butler. And I've enjoyed it. I know my daughter has enjoyed reading her copy, and I suspect many people will find it of great use. Dion, it's been a great pleasure to have you on Deep Dive again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Brooks. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And we will say goodbye till next week. And listeners, please be safe, be careful. Tune in again next Friday morning.